the Manager Mojo podcast. I'm Steve Caldwell, author of Manager Mojo, Be the Leader Others Want to Follow. We're here to offer common sense solutions and training for management and leadership issues. We believe that leaders are made, not born. Now, I would love for you to have a free copy of my book. You can pick up your copy by going to ManagerMojo.com. Look for the gold box encouraging you to join the Mojo movement and sign up. There are other free gifts just waiting for you. That's ManagerMojo.com. Now, let's get started with today's topic. All right, I want to welcome you to the Manager Mojo podcast today. And I'm excited today that we get to talk with Mr. Dino Farfante. Dino is currently the President and Chief Operating Officer of American Barcode and RFID, also known as ABNR. And joining the company in May of 2007, Dino directs the creation and implementation of the company's growth strategy. He's been a partner and member of the board of directors since 2006. Formerly, Dino was president of Insight Direct Worldwide, a wholly owned subsidiary of Insight Enterprises, a Tempe, Arizona-based Fortune 1000 company. He joined Insight North America in 1996 as senior vice president of sales and held progressively responsible roles as the company grew from $300 million in annual revenues to over $3 billion in 2005. Prior to that, he spent 10 years with Miracell Incorporated, a worldwide hardware and software technology distributor based in El Segundo, California. In addition to all of these things, Dino has served on numerous industries advisory groups, including the Board of Advisors of ValuTech, Cactus Semiconductor, and the Management Committee of Flagstaff Ranch Golf Club. Dino is a proud graduate of the University of Florida, and Dino, I'm really happy to say you're also a real good friend of mine, and I want to welcome you to the Manager Mojo podcast today.
Steve, thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here and really excited what you're doing with Manager Mojo.
Well, thank you, Dino. I appreciate it, and thanks to great people like yourself, we're going to provide a lot of value to people, and so I'd like to kind of dive into that already today. So the first thing I'd like for you to do is, for those of us that are not familiar with American Barcode and RFID, kind of tell us a little bit about your company and what you do, and just so that they'll be educated a little bit.
Thank you. Absolutely. American Barcode and RFID, ABNR, is a national solutions integrator of proven supply chain solutions. We help manufacturing, transportation, logistics, and warehousing companies really help them manage their assets, track their inventory, and manage their employees in a mobile world. We focus on tracking everything our customers deem valuable.
Okay, very cool. So you're one of these that you track everything for people. And considering I'm one of the world's worst at losing stuff, I need you to put an RFID tag on me so I can keep up with myself.
We can do that.
Dino, thank you for being here today. And what I'd like to do is to start, if you don't mind, I'd like for you to share how you actually started in management. Where was your first role, and what were you doing before you got promoted?
Actually, Steve, that goes back a number of years. I've been in the industry 28 years. My first job out of college was with a worldwide distributor of computer products called Micromerica. I actually started out entry-level in technical support. I was in that position for about 2 years, and I really was fortunate to be in an environment that everyone focused on really development and growth in the company. I looked around and was doing very well in the position I was in, but I kind of had a goal to grow in the company, learn more about the company in advance. I was very fortunate to have a manager that focused on development and really cared about his employees and creating future leaders. He took me under his wing, and within a couple of years, I went into my first management role in the technical role, a technical services role. From then, I continued to learn. I moved into a sales manager role and then grew with the company as it grew. 10 years later, through a number of different positions, I left the company at about $5 billion. The company was about $200 million when I started, and I started in technical support and left the company as senior vice president of sales and operations. So it was a fun time, very fast growth, But I was fortunate in a couple of things. Number one is I had really strong mentorship. Number two, I had a company that believed in growth and their people and development. And number three, we had a very strong vision and culture in the company that allowed people to be empowered and grow.
What a great advantage to actually have people in your first management role that actually wanted you to learn and to teach. What advice would you give to those listeners that maybe they don't have that kind of nurturing environment themselves? You know, what would be your advice to them to try to get that training that they need in order to get better?
Now, I've been fortunate in my career and the companies I've been with that we've created that environment, but I always give the same advice to everyone that talks about growth and leadership, and that's number one, no matter what role you're in, be the best you can be. Focus on your performance. Focus on you and being part of a strong team. Once you're the best at what you can do, then focus on development, learning. Take advantage of every learning opportunity you can within your role and outside of your role. They're using the tools that you have and tools that you can acquire. And then number three, find a mentor. Find someone that will help you grow the company and care about you. With those three things, you can put together a very strong individual development plan within the company.
I think, would you agree, Dino, that a lot of people, they really don't understand the value of having mentors that can kind of help them understand and give them ideas on how to do better. Would you say that can be kind of a holdback to people that really have that attitude where they're afraid to ask for that help?
I agree with you 100%. I think a lot of people feel like that's an intrusion on someone, or you know, they feel bad asking for that help. But really, strong leaders want to help. People that really have a vision and understand what growth in a company is, realize that it's about growth of the people. So if you're a leader in a company, you want to help other people grow. And so asking for that help, find the right person to help, again, doing that three steps of being the best, individual self-training, and then finding someone that can guide you, I believe that you can always find that person.
Yeah, I do too, and yet I coach clients that tell me that they've looked for a long time and couldn't find a mentor. And my statement to them was, well, I'm not sure you're really looking in the right place. Because usually it seems to me if people don't know what they really want, they don't know where they want to move forward, maybe they don't look in the right way.
And the mentor is not their manager in many, many cases. Mentors in the company come in all different shapes and sizes.
They sure
do. I agree with you. Looking for what you really are trying to achieve and then finding someone that can help you achieve that.
Yeah, wonderful advice, and I certainly hope our listeners will pay attention to that. Well, when you got that first management job, did it just come as easy as it could be to you, or did you really have to work at it?
It didn't come easy at all. I think everyone, you get what you work for, and you get out of anything what you put into it. And it really was a learning experience. I was, again, out of college. I have an engineering background, was in the technical support side of a large IT distributor. I didn't have management classes in college that I could go and learn from. So really, it was all trial and error. Again, aligning myself with strong people around the company and having an environment and culture that allowed you to take a risk, make a mistake, and then recover. I'm a strong believer, if you don't have an environment or a culture that allow people to make mistakes, they never will get better. So I had that environment. I made a lot of mistakes. And I'm sure that some of them were good mistakes and some were bad, but I learned from every single one of those. And I was lucky to be able to, again, be in an environment that I could get additional responsibility by learning and have the resources to continue to learn.
It's a common thing for all of us as we grow to make those mistakes. Are there any mistakes that you still remember and you're like, oh, you know, I can't believe I did that type thing, that you could maybe give an example to somebody that's struggling themselves today?
I can't pick up one right off the top of my head, but, you know, many different things in building organizations. That company that I was with was acquired, and I moved to California early in my career. My first goal in California when I moved on my first role was sales manager and developing a new sales organization of 40 people. And we went through and we had to, at the same time as selling during the day. Every night was a job recruiting fair. Every night was trying to bring in talent to the company that would grow. We, I believe, hired about 45 to 50 salespeople in a matter of a 3 to 4 week time frame.
Wow.
We did that through very short interviews, very, you know, not using personality profiles, not using testing, but just gut. And fortunately, we were very lucky to hire a lot of great people that I'm still in touch with today, you know, 20 years later. But the mistakes we made were not using the right tools, the right evaluation, not understanding what we really wanted by using gut. And I think a lot of leaders, a lot of managers go that way. They use gut a lot without really reaching out and looking at the tools available to them and being able to make decisions better on an ongoing basis.
Well, you mentioned decision-making, and I'm glad that you brought that up because that's a key asset and a key skill for everybody to develop. Kind of give us your take on how important decision-making is as a leader.
Well, decision-making is very important. I'm a true believer of, you know, surrounding yourself with not people, that surround yourself with very smart people that can give you all points of view. And I think that, you know, part of a leader's responsibility is getting understanding of the situation, input from people around them, and then making a decision and being confident that they can make the decision. I always go with the scenario, you know, I like people to agree and commit or disagree and commit, but once you make the decision, we all commit and go together. I think you're held accountable if you don't make decisions. Like making a decision, going forward, analyzing, evaluating whether it's a correct decision or not, and then reevaluating is the right way to go.
Okay, so let's summarize that again. So make a decision or commit to make a decision, and then reevaluate as you move forward is your advice. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You can always change that decision, but not making the decision is really the worst part of it. You don't make the decision and you don't have a clear direction. Yeah, to me, a strong leader sets a clear direction and vision, sets a clear environment and culture, and then empowers people to make decisions and works them to be the best they can be. If you're not making those decisions, you're setting a very bad example in an environment of, you know, very slow movement because people don't feel confident in the direction.
Right. They don't know what that direction is, so they can't feel comfortable. Let me share a quote with you. This is what one of your people said about you on LinkedIn, a nice referral. And I think it's great for our listeners to hear this. This is a direct quote. A lady that knows Dino said that Dino's the kind of manager that everyone dreams that they'll get. He's not only a brilliant business mind, he's kind and compassionate, a person that people naturally gravitate to. Now, what a great compliment to you, Dino. And what I'd like to for you to share is, all right, how did that come about? How does a guy that grows from just like any of the rest of us, a beginning entry-level job, you become president of a large company, but yet you still got that concern about people. So tell us a little bit about your philosophy about people and how does one become that type?
Yes, sir, it is all about people. Business is people. I've been part of two large corporations, two large Fortune 500 companies that grew from very small companies. And it was all about growing and developing talent. I looked at my role in both companies as a developer of talent. That if you focus on people, help them be the best they can be, really set a clear vision and a clear example, then you do proceed in success. You do come about success, is a better way to put it. But I really believe it all starts with people. If you don't care about the people and you don't give them a good vision and empower them to perform, then they can't be successful.
Yeah, they have to be empowered, don't they?
Empowerment's key. You know, again, from my experience in managing, really focus on trying to get the best out of every person. And every person is different. So the best way to do it is set that clear example, that vision, set the culture, people within it, allow them to succeed and allow them to be the best they can be. I'm truly a believer of working one-on-one with people. You find that what drives them to success or find what drives them, period. So you can either have them success or decide that they may not be successful in that position and move on to a different position. But really it's trying to find out, you know, how each person in the model that you've created can really contribute to success.
You know, you mentioned my favorite topic, which is one-on-ones and coaching people to success. And yet I talk with manager after manager that does not conduct coaching, one-on-one coaching with people. So just share from your perspective, what did you learn about your own career and what helped you in really conducting those one-on-ones, and kind of give them a sense of how often did you do it and what kind of priority it was?
Yeah, I think it's crucial. Again, setting the environment is important, but really a manager's job is to work with the people that they, a leader's job is work with the people that they are managing and help them succeed. I focus on a couple of key principles. Number one is you should have a one-on-one meeting with each person, talking about development, talking about goals, talking about their obstacles and trying to overcome that. Second is what I call work lists, which is working with people in the field at their environment, whether it be at their desk or in their office, but work lists of listening to what they're doing, evaluating them, positive and negative, so they can learn from the mistakes they're making and really trying to improve their performance through a work with environment. I actually, depends on how many people you're managing, but I was trying to do a one-on-one and work with at least every other week with every one of my associates as I grew in an organization. And that was at all levels, whether it be entry level or whether it be a manager of managers. Those two key areas of work with and one-on-ones are still a fundamental part of the way I do business and the way I lead.
The one-on-ones, I think one of the problems that I hear people talk about is that they believe a one-on-one's got to be a full hour meeting. And it doesn't have to be. So I'd like for you to share your perspective.
Absolutely not. It depends on the person. It depends on the opportunity and situation. But the key time to have a time reserved where you can get with one of your coworkers and have that time of investment of understanding the obstacles, making sure the vision is clear, talking about development toward that vision is key. So what I do is I reserve a segment of time for each of my managers or my employees and coworkers, and make sure that that time is their time so that they can plan and they can take advantage of it. Oftentimes, people in a fast-moving environment deprioritize that. I make that, again, a scheduled prioritization of our time together.
Right. Well, there's always time to do something that you truly value, and when you value people, you'll schedule that one-on-one and you'll help them grow, won't you?
Absolutely. And making development a priority. If development's a priority, success will come.
Absolutely. I believe they go hand in hand just like you do. Talking about one-on-ones, it brings up the topic of personal productivity. And, you know, everybody today has many demands. I mean, there's more demands on us than there are hours in the day to get done. But yet, you've always been able to get your tasks done. So, if you don't mind, I'd like to hear maybe your top tips on personal productivity. How do you go about doing it?
You know, funny that you talk about personal productivity. I transitioned from my last company, which was a large company of thousands of employees, to my current company, which we're a small business and small integrator, and have less than 50 employees. And I often said that in my previous company, we came up with great ideas, and we figured out a plan for it, and we delegated to someone to go do it. In my current company, we come up with a plan, we figure out what we're going to do, and we turn around and we have to do it ourselves. So there's less resources. So productivity becomes even more planning. In my personal life, I'm a runner by hobby, and I run a lot of races and a lot of events. And that personal planning and training and dedication that you have to put into getting ready for an event is the same thing you do in business. You have to really plan and be disciplined about your plan, and really have the goals in place so that you're on an ongoing basis, you're training every day. And I look at it as organizing myself, making sure I have the right tools, right vision, right planning, making sure my goals are correct and my calendar is correct, and then utilizing parts of the day and reserving parts of the day to make sure that not only am I doing the things that have to be done, but spending time planning to do the important things of the future, and really balancing that across the board. But if I can give anyone any kind of advice on productivity, it's about discipline. It's about creating a cadence that repeats every single day and not letting other things get in the way of that.
Yeah, the first thing that people let go is their planning. I keep hearing you talk about plan for that next day and plan for that next week. And then be disciplined to follow that plan. And when I ask people, hey, do you have a plan? They look at me like, wait a minute, I don't know what you're talking about. What is a plan? So kind of tell us what you think a plan looks like. What does it look like to have a plan for productivity? Is it scheduling? Is it thinking about priorities? You know, just give us your take on that.
Well, to me, again, it's about the discipline. It's putting that plan together up front, understanding your schedule, understanding your calendar, understanding what your priorities and goals are. I'm a big goal person. In my planning process, every one of my managers in my organization has key goals. We go with the rule of three. You know, three top things we're working on in any period of time. And every one of those goals, by the way, are built to match the company plan, the company vision and strategy. So when you have your goals in place and then you have your calendar in place and you, again, reserve the time to make sure that you're focused on those goals and accomplishing those goals, then all of a sudden you start to see progress and then you can evolve. So to me, it's planning, scheduling, having a very clear vision, and then the cadence of creating that time to do it over and over again.
Yeah, that's beautiful and great advice for our listeners. You brought up a key topic there, and I believe a real key learning point for people, and that is the rule of three. It's commonly known by executives that if you have more than three priorities, you don't have any priorities. So tell us a little bit about why three.
It's from a manageable standpoint. Now, everyone has a long list of goals that they have or things they want to do or things they have to do. But really, I believe that more than three focus goals is too much, and people start trying to overcommit and underachieve. With three, you're able to, again, set a doable goal with a doable, achievable result and then achieve that result. You know, I go with a comparison I learned early in my career, which is the ring toss analogy. And when you set a goal that's achievable and a goal that can be accomplished. You know, the old ring toss analogy is, if you have you're playing ring toss and your goal is to hit three rings on the peg and you walk up with 0 feet between you and the peg, you can drop those over very easily. There's no effort involved. If there's no effort involved, there's really no commitment and people don't put the priority to improve their performance. If you go 10 feet away and throw those rings to hit the peg, you may hit one, you may hit two. If you hit it, you're a hero. If you missed it, well, it was too far. There was really no buying into it. I really believe in the three-foot toss mentality, which is setting a goal that's achievable 3 feet away. You can hit it 90% of the time, and then you're training yourself to improve your performance. So achievable goals, achievable results, and doing it in sets of three allows you to accomplish and then move on to the next opportunity.
Yeah, and you get that feedback, don't you, that, hey, I'm moving forward. I'm accomplishing my goals, and that gives you that energy and that extra little pep that you need to move forward, doesn't it?
Yeah, every person in the business world wants to be motivated. I think motivation is success. Motivation is self-driven. Now, I don't believe someone else can make you be motivated. You have to motivate yourself. So if you create an environment for your coworkers where they can accomplish things, they have to continue to focus on it, but they can accomplish things, then they're satisfied, they're achieving things, and they create self-motivation to continue to move forward.
So they get that personal feeling that, okay, I'm engaged, I know what I'm doing, I'm happy about my goals. Then it's up to that leader when they see their people beginning to reach those goals. What kind of advice would you give them in terms of feedback to the people that they're working with?
Yeah, I think the best thing to keep people motivated is to recognize their successes, recognize their failures, and then help them with the failures to overcome and with the successes to stretch them even further. Because, again, that gives them a feeling of they're constantly moving forward and constantly hitting their goals or adjusting themselves to hit the goals.
Very cool. Let's talk about delegation and its role in successful leadership. So many people go into management, and they've never really understood how to really grow other people and how to delegate things so that others will grow. So could you give us your comments about delegation and how you think about it and how you prioritize it?
Yeah, I'm a strong believer in making sure there is a culture of delegation in an organization. You know, I'm not smart enough or good enough to do everything myself, and I don't think anyone is. So you have to surround yourself with, again, the best people you can surround yourself in any position in a company. But if you create that culture of doing the things that you can do and only you can do best, and then working with people in your organization to make sure other things get done across the board, then it makes you much more productive. So I focus on a kind of a formula I learned, again, in my career, which is ROA, result-oriented activities. Really focusing on the results that we're looking for in the company, understanding what activities get you to those results, and then creating a organizational structure that allows people to focus on those activities and get better at those activities, the quantity of quality of the activities. And if you do that, then you're empowering people to understand what the roadmap is, empowering people to understand what the best use of their time is, and then delegate them to be able to do that.
Beautiful advice. Thank you. Well, I just was curious. I think a lot of times people want to know, you're now a leader of leaders, and you've had managers that have lots of people at work underneath you. Tell us, what types of traits did you look for in those future leaders that you were growing as you moved up in the ranks in your career? What were you looking for?
You know, to me, and this also goes into the, you know, attracting talent. To me, it wasn't about the resume or the, you know, what they brought into an opportunity or position or an area. It was really what was inside of them. You know, what was the fire? What did they want to get accomplished? What they brought to the table from a goal perspective. I look for people that are very excited about doing what they need to do in an organization. I look for people that are trying to achieve and focus on specific goals. And I look for people that want to get better, that want to improve. Again, I've been very fortunate in my career to be in a number of organizations where fast growth, fast development. And my biggest success in my career was helping people develop to levels that they didn't think they could develop to. And I think that was through, you know, really focused on what's important and creating that environment that allows them to be the best they can be.
Wonderful advice. Thank you for sharing that. Now, I happen to know that you really put an incredibly high value on the customer relationship, and that you believe that customers are the lifeblood of every business. And I know that's a real focus of yours. So I would like your comments about, let me ask you this question, should every manager understand that they are actually in sales to some degree? And kind of give us your idea of, and comments about how the customer fits into.
The goal of business is really satisfying the customer or the client. You know, the way I look at our current business today, our current business model, we have a value set that every employee in the company commits to, every coworker in the company commits to. And that really is focused on a number of different values. But in the middle of it, there's a black and white bullseye. And that black and white bullseye is ensuring customer success. And that's what everyone's focus in the company is. And that kind of culture of customer, you know, customer obsession, if you will, is really what drives a company to success. And if we get everyone feeling that way and looking that way, it's not about what I care about or what someone else cares about. It's what makes the customer satisfied, how to exceed that expectation. And it really brings down to that point of clear vision of goals in a company.
As a person that commits to the customer, what do you say to those managers that are afraid to deal with customer conflict and they don't really, they want to pass it off to somebody else because they're not really in sales and they shouldn't handle it? What would you advise them to remember and think about? Because that kind of mentality is going to limit their growth. So I want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. You know, again, dealing with the customer and understanding their needs and trying to fulfill their needs isn't always a conflict situation. But there does come up conflict when a customer doesn't feel their needs are being met or doesn't agree that they're receiving the value. And I'm a strong believer, again, of from a customer perspective, that obsession of making sure that they're satisfied, that we address that. The way I coach our coworkers is that if you know you can't handle that situation, then your job is to get someone that can handle that situation. Work together as a team across the board. Now, I often find that you know, coworkers sometimes, from a customer standpoint or from a coworker standpoint, they want to deliver good news. They don't know how to deliver bad news. And it's a tough environment to do that. But through coaching or giving people the empowerment to get other people involved to help deliver that message, I think, again, is a win-win across the board.
They grow, don't they, whenever they're willing to reach out to somebody else and on the team and say, hey, I'm not sure I can handle it. The worst thing they could do is just to ignore the thing altogether.
We're all in it together. You know, people feel that they're in an environment that they can bring in help and get support, they're going to be much more successful. It isn't easy. A lot of people are conflict averse, but finding, again, a solution to the answer is the way to do it, through teamwork.
The question is, how do you advise handling conflict?
Again, from a conflict standpoint, in my career, I've learned to have thick skin. Handling conflict or handling a conflict situation is to handle conflict. The best way I found is to coach people and to deal with myself by not taking it personally. Conflict is not about a personal problem. Conflict is not about someone individually. Conflict is about a obstacle in trying to solve a problem or an obstacle in trying to get somewhere. And it's often a disagreement of the options to get to that conclusion. So if you don't take it personally, if you get, again, from a decision-making perspective, make the best decisions you can and move forward with a team approach, it overcomes a lot of that conflict.
Wonderful. Great advice. Now, would you share with me what you believe that it takes for somebody to be an outstanding boss?
From an outstanding boss perspective, I think kind of a common theme that we've been talking about today, it's really understanding the vision and it's really understanding the people that work with you. And committing yourself to make those people the best they can be toward that vision. That vision may change, and you may have to adapt. And working with the people never changes. But making sure that you're focused on making them the most successful they can be or helping them find the right role for them inside the company or outside the company sometimes. You know, it's not all about everyone's right for every position, but it is about coaching people to be the best toward that vision.
Awesome. Tell me, what did you or what do you like best about being a leader?
I'm a very competitive person, personally.
Really?
So from a leadership, yes. Not that you ever noticed. From a leadership standpoint, the most satisfying thing for me is two things. Number one is achieving our goals, succeeding, and then leading people to success. And number two is development of people. And again, if I look back on my career, you know, over the last 20-some years, my biggest accomplishments haven't been about hitting a number, but it's really been about developing people. I'm fortunate today to be in contact with people that I work with for the last 25 years and see their leadership talent being used in multiple companies and multiple industries. And to me, that's success. I guess we did hit our number, and that was very important, but we all grew in hitting that number, and we all grew in our careers. And to me, a leader is about developing people and developing talent.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful when you can see the results of all that work, all that development, and you see it playing out all around you? It's a great feeling, isn't it?
Absolutely. It really is.
This has been great. So before we leave, I want to ask you, if you would, what would you advise our listener to do today? What would be your top priorities for them to begin to make a change toward a successful management and leadership career? What would be those top two or three things you think they should prioritize right away today?
I'd say, if from a plan perspective, I'd say develop a plan.
Okay.
Make sure you have a goal. Make sure you have a vision of where you want to be. And that vision can be a six-month vision. That could be a year vision or a three-year vision. It doesn't have to be this grand plan, but what's the step you're trying to achieve in your environment today? Number two is training. Acquire the training through, you know, everywhere you can. You know, in my career, I've done everything from, you know, short day seminars to long development courses. Find the training that allows you to succeed in the position you're in and train you for that goal that you're trying to achieve. And then lastly is surround yourself with an environment of people that can help you. That could be coworkers, that could be mentors, that could be people outside the company. But surround yourself with people that aren't just yes people, but people that really care about you and will give you that advice on how to move forward.
Yeah,
those three things, I think, really come together to allow people to succeed and move forward.
That is awesome advice, and I hope that our listeners are really paying attention to that today, because I know that it will give them a successful career in management and leadership, just like you have had. Dino, I want to thank you on behalf of the Manager Mojo listeners today. Thank you for sharing your years of wisdom, and we wish you the absolute best and always success in your career.
Steve, thanks. Thank you for letting me be a small part of what you're doing. I really respect it, and I'm excited, and I wish you the best with Manager Mojo going forward.
Thank you, Dino. Thanks for joining me today on the Manager Mojo podcast. Let's rock the world. Please encourage your friends to subscribe to the podcast, and I would love for you to share and connect with me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And don't forget to pick up your free copy of Manager Mojo, Be the Leader Others Want to Follow, by going to managermojo.com and signing up to get your free gifts. Until next time, I encourage you to exercise your mojo and become the leader that others want to follow.